Welcome to Baseball Talk, ladies and gentlemen. There's been some thunder and lightning in the air, and we hope to bring you an electric show this week. I'm Andy Clark, Jamie Bennett, Rob Whiteman, and Adam Oliveira flipping the switches as always. And first of all, I want to tell you next week, we have a local guy is coming in. We've been calling him the Glove Guy. He has a side business, Schaefer Glove Relacing. So he's going to be in studio talking about his business where he refurbishes baseball gloves for people. And I just want to remind folks, too, we kicked off our Twitter account for the show. So check us out at Baseball Talk TV. And yeah, feel free to give us a follow. We're going to jump right in today. Later on, we're going to talk about MVP predictions and have a whole slate of interesting topics. But before that, we're going to start with our Twitter poll. And for our podcast listeners, I'll read that out loud for you. And it says, our question for the week, our poll question was, can Bo Bichette put together a better rookie season overall than Vladdy Jr. in the limited time left in the season that we have? And the people's choices, they could have said likely, maybe, or no chance. And I got to be honest, I found the results a little surprising on this. It was good that we asked the questions. As far as the no chance, 18% weighed in on that one.
That was me.
29% were at the maybe. And a whole 53% were saying it's likely that Bo Bichette's going to put together a better rookie season overall. So, you know, it's kind of interesting with the timing and all, like not diminishing how amazing Bo Bichette's start has been, but really how many weeks are left in the season. Like about 5 weeks, am I right?
Five or six. Yeah,
about
six,
five
yeah.
weeks. So that really, I guess there's two things there is people must assume he's going to keep on this torrid pace for five more weeks, which last night didn't give us any reason to doubt that with two more home runs against the Dodgers. But it also means yeah. Vladdy, too, they're not expecting him to get a little bit hotter either. So what are your thoughts on the poll there, guys?
Well, like I said, I was the first person to answer with no chance. Looking at it now, I think that was perhaps a tad rash. Bo Bichette, of course, has had just a torrid pace. He's been hitting at a torrid pace since he came up and joined the big club. He's been motivated like few players I've seen, you know, and even being outspoken at such a young age. But I think the body of work is the reason that I said no. Vladdy's been up here since early summer, whereas as Bo's just been up for a couple of weeks. So I'm still going to say no, but it's not as hard a no as I initially reported.
I'm pretty sure I was the first to answer likely to happen.
So, okay.
I believe, yeah, that Bo is going to have a pretty good season and probably a better one than what Vladdy's doing. Part of that, though, is perception. Everybody is hyped this kid, Guerrero, right from day one. And so I think a lot of people were expecting him to come up and hit 40 home runs. You know, and
a la Pete Alonso, right? Rookie in the
right,
National League, yeah.
Right, who is might be on pace for fifth and, you know, get 100 RBI and so on. So I think there is a bit of a perception there that, yeah, maybe Vladdy didn't live up to expectations, but maybe our expectations were pretty high.
They were pretty bananas. They were pretty crazy.
Absolutely. Yeah. When all of MLB drops everything to watch this kid on a Friday night step out of the dugout for the first time, you know that's all. There's a lot of hype there.
Well, and when you consider his father too, and he's supposed to be better than his father.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So there maybe is a little bit of a perception issue there, but I think overall, Bo is just coming up ready, and the kid just seems to be prepared. Like he just seems ready for the majors. And he talks quite often about the advice that his father gives him. And I think that's helping him out a lot. There was an interview again last night before the Dodgers game about, you know, talking to his dad about playing in some of the legendary stadiums like Dodger Stadium, Yankee Stadium, Fenway. And he was talking about chatting with his dad about that type of stuff. And so, I mean, and then he goes out and he hits the second pitch out of the park off of Clayton Kershaw, who may end up being the greatest Dodger pitcher ever. And that's saying a lot. Saying a lot considering Sandy Koufax was, you know, a Dodger. So yeah, it's, I think there's some perception there. The issues, I don't think Vladdy's not a bust.
Not at all.
No. Just give him some time.
He's been very solid for sure.
Yep.
I would agree with you, though, that the hype was just so enormous that it was hard to live up to it. Something I came across a couple of weeks ago that's still true is if you look at rookie leaders on the team in home runs, for instance, when I looked that up, I didn't realize, but Rowdy Tellez technically is a rookie this year.
That's right.
And Rowdy Tellez has spent a lot of time in the minors. Rowdy Tellez is still leading the team in rookie home runs. And if you compare that with the hype that went along with Vladdy, right? But as you say, though, I don't think we can be disappointed in him. I think he may finally be in the lead for doubles for the Blue Jays, but that might actually still be with Freddy Galvis. I know he was close to catching up, but it's kind of tough when a lot of your statistical leaders on your team have been playing with other teams for several weeks.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And I would say this, too, with Bo. We haven't seen it entirely yet, but I was kind of thinking of the Kevin Biggio. He came in and he was gangbusters for the first few weeks, you know, and he's batting cleanup. But then his average has steadily dropped. And quite frankly, he looks a little frustrated there now. Mm-hmm. And that seems to be a pattern for a lot of rookies, is they can have that initial blip for 2 or 3 weeks where the excitement, the adrenaline, and also they're an unknown quantity. But then the league sort of figures out how to pitch them.
Yep.
And it brings the numbers back down. I'm kind of surprised we haven't seen that from Bo already.
Yeah.
The one thing I want to mention, too, when we talk about comparing Bo Bichette to Vlad Jr., is I heard something on the radio that a little bit irked me the other day. And they were talking about Vlad's conditioning. And they were saying how much he needs to improve his conditioning following this minor injury that he sustained earlier this week. And, I mean, this guy is what, 20 years old? And, I mean, the guy's far from out of shape.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we've got to sort of temper our expectations for these kids. I mean, there have been a number of ball players who have exceeded expectations while not being the pinnacle of physical fitness. You know, guys like Prince Fielder was an exceptionally good baseball player. CC Sabathia, exceptionally good baseball player. Even, Rob, I think you made a comment about Babe Ruth not being the pinnacle of physical fitness.
Yep.
And he's arguably the best of all time.
Yep.
So, I don't know. I just think we need to lay off a little bit on something we mentioned earlier in the show, our high, high expectations of these guys, and realize that there are going to be bumps in the road. Those will include injuries. Injuries kept them out of the league at the beginning of the season. And you have to roll with that. And I mean, if it becomes an issue down the road, you address it, but you don't jump all over it right away.
And you know what? For a guy that, to keep that extra year of control on him, he didn't come up right away.
Exactly.
But yet he's still sitting at third on the team in at-bats.
Yeah.
So for a 20-year-old, you know, he's been pretty durable. You have to give him that.
A lot of that. And I realize there's some irony in me saying this, but there are armchair general managers that are coming up with this, you know, guys on the radio and in the media, they're just cooking a lot of this stuff up. And a lot of it's just to churn and make stories that and fill time, especially when your team's not doing great. You got to create something. In the middle of August, middle of July, you've got to create something to talk about.
And I delve to, I agree with you 100%. And I also delve into, I've referenced this before, but Bill Walsh, legendary coach of the San Francisco 49ers that won a lot of Super Bowls. But they used to say that when he was, you know, choosing his players, when he was picking them, he didn't want the guys that were, you know, had been 100% in the gym, 100%, you know, he didn't want the guys with 2% body fat, because it was his belief. He said, you know what? He said, I want the guys that are strong and quick and can do it on the field. But he says, I don't mind if they have a little bit of lipid on them there, because they tend to be more durable for whatever reason. Those guys that are, you know, have the gym body, they tend to break down a lot faster.
And I mean, as long as your guys are healthy and they're performing, you don't have to be critical of everything they
do. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. They tend to overanalyze, which is going to be a question I'm going to get to in a minute about overanalyzing and overmanaging. But now that we've talked about Bo and Kevin and Vladdy, one of our topics we want to talk about was the Blue Jays' next wave, because there was just so much anticipation for those three. And there's a lot of talk about, yeah, there's a lot in the system coming through. So the big question I want to throw out there is, who are we excited to see next? Who's the next in line coming along? I know the big three have kind of spoiled us, and we can't necessarily hold them exactly to that standard. But who are going to be the next thrilling players coming through the Blue Jay system?
I think over the last two nights, answers your question, at least for me. And one is Nate Pearson.
Oh, 100%.
This kid, he's being compared to Roger Clemens. He's throwing over 100 miles an hour. They said he didn't look sharp last night, but anytime he didn't look sharp, he was just blowing the ball by them, and they couldn't see it. So I'm really looking forward to this kid. The kid's just an ox up on the.
So Nate Pearson had his first,
and he reminds me maybe a little bit of Sabathia in a way that his build. He's a big kid,
physical presence,
but he just brings the heat. I'm really looking forward to that.
And it's fun to have a flamethrower, and he's a flamethrower.
Absolutely.
The one that I would mention, and I don't know.
Sorry, before we depart from Nate, I just want to give some context for our audience there. So Nate Pearson, he's 6'6", 245 pounds. So there's your physical intimidation there. And so he actually has spent almost the entire year in the AA at New Hampshire for the Blue Jays. But last night he had his first start for AAA Buffalo Bisons. And what was encouraging was it was seven innings pitched. He allowed only three hits. He had three strikeouts. Didn't walk anybody and did not allow a run. So for first debut in AAA, that's very encouraging.
I believe it's his longest game of his pro career so far.
And I do want to throw out there, actually, Nate Pearson got on my radar 2 years ago when he was out in Vancouver playing in their single A system. And it was actually one of our guests on the show at the time who at that time was a reporter for the Buffalo Bisons, someone with local roots from Arthur, Ontario, Rodney Heemstra. And Rodney's now actually, his title is Baseball Media Associate for the Toronto Blue Jays. So he had done an internship there after being a reporter for the Buffalo Bisons, and now he's now part of their media department. I know they've brought up his name a few times on radio broadcasts for the Jays there. So, yeah, he first got on my radar, Nate Pearson did, through Rodney. So Nate Pearson had his first start. And then the start before that, there's another physically intimidating player, did some pretty impressive stuff. Sorry, actually, you know what? We'll get back to that. I stole your segue. Who are you going to bring up next?
That's okay. I don't know a ton about him, but I'm excited based on his reaction to being brought into the organization, and that's Alek Manoah, the first-round pick of the Blue Jays in this year's draft. If there's something that the Blue Jays need, it's young, controllable arms with high ceilings. I think he's one of them. I was really happy to see that he was so happy to be joining the club because there's a lot of players out there that would, you know, they'd like to go to the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Dodgers, one of these storied clubs that have been around for almost 100 years. But just to see sort of how excited he was leads me to believe that he could be like a Marcus Stroman, a guy who's really embodies the spirit of a team. Now, the other one I'd like to mention, and I know that he's sort of fallen off the radar, and including not being protected in the Rule 5 draft last year, was Max Pentkost, catcher, former 11th overall pick, I believe. And I'd like to see it potentially a return from him. I know he's had a lot of injury problems, and at one point he was even considering retirement.
Oh, wow.
And if he has retired since then, and I've missed it, I apologize. But I know the Blue Jays have some good catchers in the system right now, you know, Danny Jansen and, you know, others.
Reese McGuire.
But I would like to see an opportunity be given to Max Pentkost to recover his professional career.
And another name that actually wasn't too familiar to me until he sort of forced his way onto our radars was TJ Zook, who pitched a 114-pitch no-hitter for the Buffalo Bisons just a few days ago. Also had three strikeouts, one base on ball, and one hit one batter. So it wasn't a perfect game, but it wasn't too far off. So that was an exciting one to watch there. TJ's so as big as Nate Pearson is at 6'6 and 245, Zook is 6'7 and 225 pounds.
Wow.
So he's also a huge physical presence. So far, he's 4-2 in AAA this year with a 3.87 ERA, 47 strikeouts, 32 base on balls. And it was the second ever no-hitter for the Buffalo Bisons. You know who got the last one?
Ricky Romero, I believe.
Bartolo Colon.
Oh, that's right.
Everybody likes Bartolo.
That's right. I didn't read that. The big sexy. That's
so
right.
22 years ago, Bartolo Colon, I didn't realize he pitched for Buffalo back then.
That was before the Blue
then.
Jays were affiliated with him, but yeah. I do remember that.
So yeah, that'd be probably 22, you know, that would be before the steroid scandal that he was a part of there too.
But I mean, Bartolo Colon, I mean, steroids, and I mean, it's not just steroids, but they worked for him. They arguably extended his career.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And I mean, there's probably not a more recognizable player in the baseball who's not a superstar than Bartolo Colon.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily have to be muscle-bound, right? Sometimes it's things like the HGH, which speed recovery and things like that, that allow you to get back out there or pitch longer. So, so there you go. Now, having said that, so Nate Pearson and TJ Zook are pretty exciting prospects in the pipeline. Someone that probably we're not excited to see pitch coming out of the Buffalo Bisons was shortstop Richard Urania, who, we'll get into the details of this, but yeah, called up by the Blue Jays, flown out to the coast to play against the LA Dodgers. And I think he may have entered the game as a shortstop, but then ended up pitching the eighth inning because they had a shortage of arms. So Richard Urania, their shortstop, fresh from the minors, pitched one inning, allowed four hits, had one walk, allowed one home run, and four earned runs. So, which leads me to, how do we get there? You know, where did we arrive at this point where a minor league shortstop is pitching a full inning for the Blue Jays? Has it really come to that? One of the mitigating factors was there's an expectation for players not to go very long. I believe last night they'd had a starter, and then it was Reed Foley, I believe. And Reed Foley, he went the longest of any Blue Jay pitcher last night, 1.2 innings. 1 2/3 innings, and that's well, they don't call them starters anymore, but your main guy. So they had someone pitch an inning, then he only went 1.2 innings, and no one else went more than that. So they had a shortage of arms. And apparently Thomas Pannone, they had flown him out with them, but since he recently pitched three innings, a lot of teams have got into this cute little move where if it's a pitcher on options, if they put together three innings, apparently they're no good for a while, so they'll option them to the minors. So they flew Pannone out to the coast and then optioned him to Buffalo. So you had to turn around and fly back. And then you end up with a shortage of arms on the bench. It's the phrase they use a lot is fresh arm. Mm-hmm. And to give another example, Joe Biagini, who no longer with the Jays, he's with Houston and has been pitching very well for Houston. He has a 2.64 ERA in his time since he's been with Houston, but he pitched three innings the other day. So they did the same thing. They optioned him, even though he's pitching well. And as far as I understand, once they option them down, they're not eligible to come back for 10 days.
I believe you're right.
But the idea is they're clearing a roster spot and they're supposed to bring someone up. With the Jays, they sent Thomas Pannone down. I guess they haven't thought ahead enough. And so some fresh arms, I guess, are on the way for today, but they weren't there in time.
About a week ago, somebody was called up. Oh, it was Telez, was brought back up. And somebody tweeted, one of the Toronto media, that it was in the Blue Jay clubhouse, it was this series of chaotic meetings with Ross Atkins, the coaching staff, and the trainers trying to figure out who was going to go down. And he actually said, I've never seen so much disorganization in my life. And so you have to wonder if there's a little bit of that there, that they're making moves quicker than they can plan out, you know. And maybe that's a a product of just having so many young guys and really not having being prepared to go the entire season with the arms that they've got.
So are these decisions that Charlie Montoyo's part of, or is this coming from higher up?
I would imagine Atkins will make the decision, but it'll be based on recommendations from the coaching staff and the trainer. So, I mean, they decide, hey, we're going to bring up Telez, but they haven't decided who's going to go back down. And then, well, you know, if you send so-and-so down, well, that leaves my bullpen short. And it just kind of snowballs from there. And it sounds a little messy behind the scenes a bit. And Atkins was actually only signed for a one-year extension. And it makes you kind of wonder if Shapiro isn't liking what he sees as far as stuff like that is concerned.
Now, he's thrown us a curveball before, though. I thought 100%, and actually, I believe the Vegas odds backed me up in that Eric Wedge was going to be the next manager of the Toronto Blue Jays, and that didn't happen.
Yeah.
So who knows what Mark Shapiro is thinking.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, and this whole thing, that this fresh arm thing and optioning people down, I was watching part of the Dodger game last night, and the commentator made a valid point. They said, in sport, you want to be motivating. You want to reward success. In, like, if you look at the case with Joe Biagini, right? He goes three innings, three solid innings, and then he gets optioned down because he's got, you know, have to be replaced by a fresh arm. First of all, since when have our major league pitchers become that tender that three innings means they can't pitch for 10 days? It's kind of ridiculous, and maybe we need to, I know the agents are part of that too, right? They have investments, and they want the longevity, and they want their arms to be good. So we need to have a bit of a reset, though, and a little bit of common sense. These are professionals. We don't want to burn them out, but you can, as a professional pitcher, go more than three innings and bounce back a few days later. The other thing is this. What does that say to the player? Because really, if you're given that assignment, you should want to be eating up as many innings as you can. And you're actually getting them in the mind frame of, oh no, I pitched two really good innings. If I go out there and, you know, have a 1-2-3, I'm going to be sent to the minors. Cause
yeah.
So that's kind of the opposite of what you want, right? You want to reward success.
There was actually a coach back in the day, and I can't remember his name, but as I recall, it was in R.A. Dickey's book, that one of the coaches actually had the pitchers throw every day.
Mm.
So it's sure a departure from old-time baseball.
From the old days. Yeah, and you don't want to get into the old, you know, make them throw until their arm falls off and then their careers are shortened. But, you know, this is going way beyond Kawhi Leonard load management, right? Mm-hmm. It's, I was going to throw out that phrase, is it a case of overmanaging?
Yeah.
And then, then at the end of the day, you know, you end up, hey, Richard Urania, welcome to the big leagues again.
Yeah.
Well, you pitch an inning for us too. Yeah. Get on the mound. It's kind of a joke, right?
Well, these guys also, they're athletes. Like, they aren't just, you know, he's not just a shortstop. He's not, you know, just an infielder. I mean, they are athletes. I mean, look at Steve's stats from a few weeks ago with Luke Maile being the top performing pitcher on the Blue Jays. Small sample size, of course. But, I mean, we've seen guys who were position players come back as pitchers or vice versa, guys like Rick Ankiel. Josh Hamilton, when he was a kid, was a pitcher before he decided he wanted to play every day and became an outfielder. Like, these guys are athletes, so it's not the worst to have them pitch, but also, and I think if you were in critical games, it's not ideal.
Yeah, but no one can argue that the Jays are anywhere close to a critical game at this point.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, and you know what? Quite frankly, we want to see them sweat a little bit. You know, while we're sitting on the couch all comfortable, you know, sipping a chilly drink. We want to see them sweat. We want to see them get dirty. So let them go more than two innings, for heaven's sake. So
that's, I think, you know, when we go back to the rule changes, the three batter minimum with the pitchers, that's going to keep those pitchers in there longer.
Force that hand.
It might actually shorten up the bullpen a little bit, you know, when we think about it.
All right. So that brings us around to our next topic, our Captain Crunch. And this one is, should MLB teams have captains? We know football tends to have captains. We know it's a long tradition in hockey. Is it something that should happen in MLB baseball? So we'll start with Jamie, you're the one who actually masterminded this topic for us here. What are your thoughts?
Well, it was something that I had heard discussed on national media. And I mean, like what they said is basically what I agree with. And that is you will always have a leader on your team, regardless of whether they wear a C or an A or what they wear. I mean, you go back to with your hockey analogy, you know, Roberto Luongo wore the C on his helmet in Vancouver. And I mean, it was unlikely that a goalie would ever be a successful captain wearing the C, but he was clearly the leader on that team.
In fact, I believe it was my understanding that it used to be against the rules.
I believe that
it was an unwritten rule in hockey. And Mike Gillis said, hey, he threw it out at a GM meeting and they all shot him down. And he still made him a captain. Mm. And it was after that that they said no more goalie as captains. That became a rule.
And I mean, like you know guys, like the example they used on the program I heard was Derek Jeter in the New York Yankees. You knew nobody else was the leader on that team. It was Derek Jeter. I mean, but then you get a team like the Toronto Blue Jays that are very young, very impressionable, learning how to lose, learning how to win. And I mean, maybe you need to establish that hierarchy. And I mean, like you read some of these books about sports, baseball in particular, and some of the hazing that went on with the younger players at the hands of the established players. And I mean, like, you don't want that infiltrating your clubhouse, but you want the positive influence to be acknowledged. And that's where you get a guy like Freddie Galvis or Eric Sogard or one of these other older guys who are putting together a good season. And I don't think there's a problem with, you know, stapling or stitching a C to their shirt.
Yes and no, though. But if it's already happening, what are you really gaining other than maybe some petty jealousies, right? Especially because, again, agents are a huge part of this. And every kind of feather that might get you a few more bucks, you know, the agents are going to be sniffing around like a bunch of hungry dogs. So let's say you give it to Sogard, you know, so all of a sudden Galvis's agents, you know, beacon about it. So it's creating a distraction you don't need. We know that there's been guys like Smoke and Sogard and Galvis that have been fantastic veteran leaders. Let them be fantastic veteran leaders. They don't need to put a C on their jersey to do it.
I think it's just a recognition. And I mean, like, with the case of someone like Derek Jeter, I mean, they were an outstanding player anyway. But for some of these guys who aren't, they're more journeyman players. Mm. I don't think there's necessarily something wrong with the acknowledgement. Now, maybe we don't have to go as far as actually putting a letter on their jersey. But I think that there could be an acknowledgement of this person is a leader on our team.
Yeah, I think there's ways to do that without making them a captain. And also, I think to go to hockey where we've seen it, I've seen it managed kind of poorly sometimes. You know, there's been all of this hot air about, oh, Austin Matthews should have the C. He's not ready for it. Plus, they have so many leaders on that team. Tavares last year, they had Marlowe. They have so many on there. So I think you're putting an unfair expectation on them. And I'd compare it back to Adam Oliveira's favorite team, the Colorado Avalanche, where when they put Gabriel Landeskog, at the time was the youngest captain at the age of 18, it really, I think, held him back a little bit. It was an unfair expectation. And you mean to tell me if you have some guy, whether he's a star or been scraping around the league for a lot of years, that's 27, he really wants to be taking advice from an 18-year-old that's wet behind the ears, right?
Well, they might, though. And I mean, it's all about, you know, some of these guys would be mature beyond their years, right? And I mean, like, there would be situations in every workplace where you have to be able to take advice or criticism from someone younger than you. Even if they're, you know, if they're better, if they're, you know, having better success, then like, yeah, help me learn, you know, help me be like you. I think that, you know, there would be some people who would have an ego problem with that. But if you're really doing it for the betterment of yourself and your team, I don't think it's much of an issue.
Yeah, but if you're doing it for the betterment of the team, you don't really need a formal acknowledgement. Like, right here, I'm tapping on Tim Raines' autobiography, right? And we all know what a huge influence in his life was Andre Dawson. In fact, Tim Raines named his son Andre after Andre Dawson. And someone like Andre Dawson is just, you know, he's going to be that guy. He doesn't need anyone to put a C on his chest to make it happen, right? So I'd say, you know, as a management, you want to foster, whether they're young or old, you want to foster positive leadership and collaboration amongst your whole team. And the whole captain thing, I think, actually has as much potential to set it spinning off in the wrong direction as it does to help. Actually, I'd say it probably has more potential to unsettle things than to promote what you want to achieve from it.
I agree with you, Andy. I don't think it's necessary. Jason Bearcat with the Red Sox seems to come to mind that he actually did have a C on his jersey for a while there for a couple of seasons. I don't know whether maybe they told him to take it off or what, but I'm pretty sure he actually wore a C, and he was considered the captain. They used to call Jeter the captain. I think that there's leaders on the team that will step up. You get them in, and I don't know. I just don't think it's necessary. I'm fine with the way it is. I sometimes find the whole captain thing in hockey a little goofy, if you ask me. It's taken very, very seriously, and it gets, I think it just creates more of an argument than it really needs to be. And we've seen that with the Toronto Maple Leafs over the last few years, that when they haven't had a captain. And it usually seems to be, the Leafs or the Habs or, you know, some of these original six story teams that where it's the hottest.
It's the tradition, yeah. Right? And it's who you're being compared to.
Exactly.
I mean, like, would any of us in this room or watching or listening on the podcast group Dion Phaneuf with Daryl Sittler, with George Armstrong?
Wendell Clark.
Exactly.
Absolutely Gilmore.
Not. Exactly.
Absolutely not. So, and that's, I don't know, I think there's enough put on younger players that throwing a C on their jersey, I think is just a little much.
Yeah.
You know what? Like, I think if you put a C on Jose Bautista's jersey, he was that much of an egomaniac that it might have actually kind of gone to his head, and he might have been more of a pain in the neck than a leader. And they actually say Donaldson was like that too in the clubhouse, that he was a real alpha male. And there's actually a story that came out late spring, I guess. Stephen Brunt, I believe, was the one who talked about it on the radio, that part of Dalton Pompey's problem that first season that they brought him up started with the club. He was bullied by Josh Donaldson.
Well, you hear about that type of thing happening, and you also hear about somebody who's trying to be helpful who ends up hindering. There was a situation reported about that with the Buffalo Sabres a number of years back when Derek Roy was being essentially mentored by Andrew Peters and would get frustrated by Peters not wanting to let him do anything.
Mm.
So, I mean, like, it certainly has to be restricted to a degree.
Yeah.
So I'm going to qualify what I said before. I was strongly anti-captain. Never say never. I think maybe in certain situations, if you have the right individual and you perhaps don't have established culture of collaboration, then maybe temporarily to try and fan the flames, you can maybe, if you have that right individual, to get the ball rolling. But I think from that, then you have to pull back and basically say, all right, we want a team of leaders. We want a team of leaders that will work together and not be butting heads and competing. It's not about who's the number one and who's the number two. It's like, let's all be our best, right?
Yeah.
So I think there might be certain very limited circumstances where I'd say, throw a captain in there, but for the most part, I'd steer clear.
Yeah, I think when you look at the 2015 Jays, those were some alpha males strutting around there with Encarnacion, Bautista, Donaldson. You had Martin, who traditionally the catcher is kind of a leader for the team. And when they brought Martin in, they said this guy is going to be his team.
And he was Canadian too, which made it that much
more poignant. I'm sure Bautista and Donaldson, you know, guys like that didn't like to hear that.
No.
Well, if you think back to the championship years too, like when you had Joe Carter, Paul Molitor, Winfield, Steve was still kicking around, you know, at the end of his career.
Jack Morris,
like who on earth could you pick, right? Like,
yeah, absolutely.
So
I remember seeing a story with an interview with Paul Molitor after they got Ricky Henderson in 93. And he came to get on the bus for the first time, and all the front seats were full. And he says, Ricky, don't ride the back of the bus. And Paul Mulder says, Ricky's going to ride in the back of the bus here. Get moving. Right. I mean, can you imagine telling Ricky Henderson, the greatest base stealer and leadoff hitter of all time, go sit down and shut up?
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, there's leaders, obviously, you know.
Yeah.
So,
and that's sort of an example of egomania.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, that's almost putting yourself above the team. I mean, you sit wherever there's a spot, exactly, essentially.
Exactly.
Alrighty. So that brings us around to our next is from the Clark guys. And this year we've done a steady diet of MLB, Major League Baseball, looks back at days gone by. So I decided to dip into doing something a little more grassroots, a little more local. I've done that in past years. So I went to 1983 Hanover Post. I went really local. And the headline for our podcast listeners is Pee Wee's Win. And interestingly enough, there was an accompanying picture. So the article was from September 28th. But the picture that went with it didn't run until November 2nd. And then I believe, again, it was, then they used it again on the front page shortly after that in November. But the gist of this one was the Hanover Legion Peewees had just beat out Goderich to repeat as WOAA champions. That was Western Ontario champions. They'd had a fairly successful season. They'd won a tournament in Flesherton. They were runner-up at two other tournaments. They had gone as far as the semifinals in the Ontario Championships, where they lost to Port Hope. And overall, they in 45 games, they only had 8 losses. And yeah, a lot of familiar names there. Actually, a bunch of these guys, these were 1 year and 2 years older than me. So every second year, I played with some of these guys. Jamie Edwards was a really good young pitcher there. He could curve the ball both ways, which was always impressive to us. And Glenn Steinoff, whose dad, Al, coached a lot of teams for a lot of years. Mike Beckberger was a good young pitcher there. So, yeah. And the name, it says Paul McCutcheon there, but it was Paul McKeon. So, I just have a memory back of playing Pee Wee baseball with Paul McKeon. Really nice kid, but he had this kind of sneaky, like, snap temper sometimes. And way back, so probably be like 1984. Back then, the Peewees used to play on a ball diamond where currently the Hanover Heights school is. So the old James A. McGee school was there, and there was a ball diamond where the new school is. And being Peewee, kids don't always have great control of their pitches. So Paul McKeon was at bat, and he got plunked pretty good by a fastball. And before we knew what happened, I just remember he kind of said a cuss word, and he took 2 steps, he picked up the ball, and he rifled it back at the pitcher, who luckily ducked, so the ball went rolling into the outfield. But, you know, it was amazing to me when I think back on it, too. I think a couple parents sort of said, you know, hey, Paul, calm down, calm down. And the game just went on, right?
Because that kind of is a wild pitch.
Yeah. But, yeah, you don't see that often, right? You get plunked, and then instead of rushing the mound, it actually makes a lot more sense, right? You get plunked by the ball. Hey, here, right back at you. How do you like it? Right. So anyway, so if you do want to read that at your leisure, it's posted on our Twitter account at Baseball Talk TV. And yeah, check it out and hope you enjoy it. So
I want to point something out based on Rob and I's conversation. And that is, when you're a kid versus when you're an adult, you move more forward towards the bus where you want to sit. All the kids want to sit at the back of the bus. Mm-hmm. I remember that from when I was a kid.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Well, in my other life as a school teacher, that's one thing I learned, is I got to sit in the back, because if they know your eyes are not on them,
well,
an awful lot of stuff happens that otherwise just sitting at the back automatically doesn't happen, right? Now, I'm not saying it's perfect then, but I just noticed that when teachers sit at the front, things start to go bad really fast. So, yeah. And I can see why the kids want to sit at the back too, right? All right, so that was our Clark Ives for this week. You can check it out on our Twitter account. And that brings us around to our next topic here, is there's a very tight race between four players as far as who is going to have the most home runs this season. So let's do a little prognostication. What are your thoughts, guys? Who's going to be our home run king this year?
I think in the NL, it's Christian Yelich, for sure. Although Pete Alonso, the rookie, is on pace for 50 home runs, never done by a rookie before.
Right before the show, I had another one of those packs from our card opening.
Yes.
So I cracked it open, and I got a Pete Alonso rookie card right there.
And he, of course, he's the guy that beat Vladdy Jr. in the home run derby.
$1 million,
he's sneaking up there as well. But I think Christian Yelich is just runaway all-around best player in the NL.
Yeah.
And
we're going to get to the MVP thing in a moment.
Yeah.
So we're talking just purely home runs right now. So you think Yelich is going to?
Yeah, I think Yelich. Trout is also on pace.
He hit one last night.
Having,
he's at 42 now.
As scary as it may seem, a career year. Yeah, he's got a lot more to come yet.
What's your thoughts, Jamie?
I don't follow the NL all that well. I was listening to the radio the other day, and they had a question for one of their contests. Name one of the three teams that are in the basement of the NL. And I couldn't have answered it correctly.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to echo Rob's guess, and that's Christian Yelich. And, I mean, this guy has been incredible since he joined Milwaukee. And I think that he's destined for greatness this season.
So I crunched some numbers there. So the big four so far right now, Trout's at 42. Cody Bellinger for the Dodgers is at 42. Yelich is at 41. And Peter Alonso's at 40. Bellinger's only played 3 years. So 42, 25, 39. So he's already into a career year himself for home runs. He's averaged 35 over his three seasons. Yelich did have 1 year. Well, his first few years, he started a bit slowly as far as the home run department. He had 4, then 9, then 7, and then started to heat up with 21. And then it was the last couple of years, he had 36 last year, and he already is into a career year at 41. So he's averaged 20 over 7 seasons, but he's averaged 32 over his last three. Trout, he's been around for 9 seasons, but one of them, he was just up for a little blip. He actually came up and didn't really light it up, so he was sent back down to AAA for a little while. So if we don't count that first year where he had 5 home runs, he's averaged 35 over his first 8 full seasons, and he's hit 37.6 over the last 3. And then Pete Alonso's in his only year, he's hit 40. So if you want to see who's most consistently been hitting them, I would go with Trout.
Pete Alonso's a special player. He's going to be a special player.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
You don't think he'll be a flash in the pan?
Not at all.
No. I think he's all around going to be, a very special player.
So there's a few players kind of in a secondary pack back there. Soler, Acuna, Suarez, and Kepler. They're all in that 35, 34 range, so... That'll be interesting to see. Maybe we'll do a Twitter poll on that one and see what the viewers think, is who they predict will be the home run king. But having said that, too, it's kind of an interesting conversation. But at the end of the day, some of them are on teams that are going to go to the playoffs, and some of them aren't. So it doesn't really make that much difference, right?
Yeah.
It's bragging rights. Which brings us around to our final topic, our big one, is our predictions for MVPs. And we're going to go in three categories here, National League, American League, and the Blue Jays. If this might actually be a kind year if they maybe just took that one off, maybe, and like, maybe we'll sit this one out. I don't know. But let's start with the National League. Who do you guys, we said throw three names with your pick, if you can. So tell us who you got and what are your reasons.
I think probably we've talked about them. Yelich is one, Bellinger is another one, and Alonso's the other, the third. I think Alonso runs away with Rookie of the Year, though.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Christian Yelich, the guy's just, he's helped keep Milwaukee in the playoff hunt all season, and he's just a monster of a player. I think Blue Jays were within inches of getting him, but it may have meant giving up Bo Bichette. I don't know if I do that deal now. 2 years ago, I might have, just mm-hmm. because of what the projections were going to be. But I don't know if I'd do that. I'm pretty sure I wouldn't do that now. Over on the AL, I only have one name, and that's Mike Trout. And I think you should just pencil him in for about 6 years. The guy's going to be one of the greatest baseball players ever.
Yep.
Flat out. And I just, what he's doing is mind-boggling.
Do you think that the Blue Jays, when they gave up as much as they did for Derek Fisher, thought they were getting Mike Trout? You know, with the whole last name Fisher and Trout thing?
That is a far cry. I can't even answer that one. No, I think they were well aware of what they were getting. A guy who was going to get hit in the face as he was playing in the outfield. And you know what? The Sanchez and Biagini contributed to the no-hitter that first night. Last night, I saw a tweet from a Houston Astros fan saying, really, is this what Sanchez is all about? And he was topping out at about 80 miles an hour. Like, it was just...
He had a pectoral injury or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean... But anyway, getting back to the MVP. Back to the MVP, I think Mike Trout just... the guy's just... He's going to... It's amazing to be able to see him and say that I was around to watch during him that play. Year. You know, but the guy's just a machine.
So to crunch some numbers here, Yelich is first in quite a few major categories there. Batting average, on-base percentage, slugging percentage. So obviously OPS is tied for first in total bases. And runs created, interesting category. I really haven't looked at too much. He's first overall there too. Notices strikeouts are up there, which that's a minor criticism. So he's first in quite a few major categories. There is a player, though, that's second in almost all of those, and that's Cody Bellinger. And Cody Bellinger, second in quite a few, tied for first in total bases, second in runs created, second in runs, OPS, slugging, on base. Wins against replacement. It's one of those statistics. It's a little newer. I don't know how much stock you put in it. He actually ran away with that one. Overall wins against replacement, he's an 8.1. Yelich is 5.9. And then the other factor is that Bellinger's definitely going to the playoffs. The Dodgers are going to do big things this year. And the Milwaukee, they're like three games back in that Central. So
that's
kind of
why I elevate Yelich, because Bellinger's got a darn good team around him. And he's had a team that's gone to two World Series back-to-back already. And whereas Yelich is a little bit more putting the team on his back. That's
He has a bigger percentage of what they are achieving.
Yeah, a lot of what they're doing is because of Christian Yelich.
So National League, what are your thoughts?
Well, I'll be honest. What I was initially going to say for home run champion was Cody Bellinger. Then when Rob said Christian Yelich, I thought, you know what, that's probably a better pick. So I'm going to actually stick with that. So then I'm going to give this one to Cody Bellinger. And I think that you've sort of made my argument for me. But I do also agree with that the Dodgers are going places this season. I honestly don't believe there's a team in the AL that could beat them this year. So if they get through the NL, I think they'll finally win a championship after being to the dance 2 years in a row and coming home empty-handed. So... Cody Bellinger is my NL MVP as of today. AL, again, I'm totally with Rob. It's Mike Trout and Mike Trout alone.
No, that's interesting because when I was considering that, one of the other names that came up was from one of your favorite non-Blue Jay teams, Boston there. And there could be an argument made for a couple of people there, but the one I looked at most was Devers.
Okay.
He's leads the American League in hits, RBIs. He has 101 RBIs. Mm-hmm. So he's third in batting average. I'll try to make the case here, guys, to make it interesting. He's first in total bases by a pretty good shot.
But is he better than Mike Trout this year?
And when it comes down to when you simplify it to that, I'd say no. One category that really not working in his favor. He has 18 errors, whereas Mike Trout only has 3. So definitely Mike Trout being much more reliable on the field. And then if we go back to that wins against replacement, Mike Trout has a Cody Bellinger-like 8.3, which is Devers is all the way down in tied for 9th at 5.1. So there you go. I was trying to make it interesting, but the other name I looked at there was Bregman, who was 3rd in wins against replacement, 3rd in on-base percentage. So he's done well in some categories, but you can't make the argument that he's better than Mike Trout. So there you go. I think American League is a bit of a slam then.
Yeah, I think Mike Trout's what he's doing is he's creating opportunities for the media to stir up stories, like I was saying earlier, because there just is no other argument.
It's the race for second place.
That's what it is, you know. And Mookie Betts could probably be in there, and you know, the list goes on. But
go on. As far as the National League goes, some of the other names I had looked at that couldn't, you know, they were in the conversation a little bit, but couldn't hold water with Bellinger and Yelich, was Acuna from Atlanta.
He's very good.
And I looked at Marte also a little bit from the Diamondbacks. Marte's leading the National League in hits. He's 4th, 5th in quite a few categories. He's 3rd in wins against replacement. Only one error, so that's to his commendation. But
sorry, which Marte is that?
Not the Pittsburgh Marte.
Yeah, because that's what I mentioned when you said Marte. Marte, and I thought, I don't think he puts
Because Starling's like leading in stolen bases or something like that. But overall, his numbers aren't as impressive. And then I looked at Acuna, who again he's like 1st in runs, 3rd in runs created, 2nd in hits. So he's having a good year, but not certainly a Cody Bellinger or a Yelich.
Yeah, and Acuna actually, when we were talking, throwing these ideas out, he did come to mind as well, but he was pretty disappointing.
Andy, who was your NL pick? I don't think we got your NL pick.
Oh, I was Cody Bellinger.
Cody Bellinger, yeah.
What about the Blue Jays?
Yeah, so that brings us to this nasty situation here, because if you look at statistically for batting, a lot of people that are leading Blue Jays categories have not been with the team for quite a few weeks. Right? I think we referenced before, Galvis. Freddie Galvis is still leading them in doubles and things like that. So there's quite a few of their categories are like that. But having said that, when you crunch the numbers, there's actually someone who there is a very strong case for, and it might surprise people. But it's kind of also depressing when you look at what you're choosing from this year. So did you want my picks first, or go? Okay. So if you look at who's at the top of most categories and most meaningful categories, there's 5 names really start bubbling up most often. And that's actually, believe it or not, Brandon Drury bubbles up in some. Vladdy bubbles up in some. Justin Smoak, the veteran who's not having his best year, but is having a decent year. Hernandez, who spent some of the year in the minors. Teoscar, yeah, has strung together one of the best seasons.
I think Paul would have something to say about that if he was here.
He would, but I'll circle around to that one in a second, too. But the one who's at the top of most categories is Randall Grichuk.
See, I don't even think about Randall Grichuk, but he's had a good year.
He quietly goes about his business.
Yeah.
And he's just a solid player. Yeah. And, you know, I think that 5-year, $50 million contract is going to be justified in the long run.
Yeah, it sure appears so.
Yeah, as far as at-bats, he by far and away has had the most at-bats at 458, which speaks to his consistency. 1st in games, 2nd in hits with 109. He's 9th in average, but this whole team has largely terrible averages other than Vladdy. That's one where Vladdy really shines. He's 1st in runs with 59. He's 1st with RBIs with 58. Fielding percentage is very impressive, 996. Only 2 stolen bases, just, you know, to see that element. But the Blue Jays don't run as a team, so that's not a big deal. He has only 1 error, 23 home runs, 293 on base percentage, which isn't impressive, but it's still top 10 on the team. So, yeah, there's no one can really hold a light for consistently being on the top of categories. Vladdy's second in, he's tied for second in RBIs. He's fifth in average. He's fifth in runs, third in hits, sixth in games played, 14 errors. Vladdy does need to tighten up the fielding a little bit.
I honestly think you're going to see Vladdy next year start at first base.
Yeah.
I do believe that's where he it will end up.
Because, you know what, there's only 14 errors, but how many have you seen where, you know, he gets to the ball but can't make the play either, right?
And he tries to throw it and he throws it away.
Or he just eats it, just hangs on to it, right? So as far as Justin Smoke goes, let's see here. Seventh in hits, and his batting average is a dismal .213, which is 14th on the team. Fourth in runs, fourth in RBIs. Fantastic fielding, .997 for a first baseman. So he's definitely done it with the glove out there. He's only made two errors this year, and 19 home runs ties him for second on the team. So really, I would put Grichuk first. Hernandez, there's a case for him being a runner-up. On-base percentage of .299. 19 home runs, only three errors. And it's interesting because he has a reputation as being a bad fielder, but he's actually been pretty reliable. You know, guys like Lourdes and stuff have struggled, but Guerrero's got it together a bit. He's stolen four bases, tied for fifth in RBIs, fifth in runs, and that's basically it. But yeah, really, Grichuk statistically is the MVP.
And you know, that might be a guy that could be just a quiet leader. When we go back to the captain leadership topic, he might be a guy that they saw something in him around the clubhouse and said, hey, we want to keep this guy around these young kids because he's a positive guy. He really seems to want to be here. And, you know, I really think that's it was a decent signing.
And I do remember them saying earlier this year that they made a slight adjustment to his stance, where his shoulders were getting forward.
Yeah.
And I guess he was lunging a lot more in those outside pitches. So he got a little more upright. And you can really see that when he's getting into the box. He makes a real point of shoulders above the hips. And that's really allowed him to take off since he's done that. So does anyone else have any possibility?
I'm going to personally say Vlad Jr. And the reason I say that is because he's made the team watchable for most of the season. That's why people have tuned in. They've tuned in to see Vlad Jr. And Rob, I think you said that earlier in the show. I mean, have there been growing pains? Absolutely, there have. But, I mean, when it comes to the bigger picture, you know, when revenue they're drawing in from merchandise and ticket sales and, you know, the hope that fans have in the future, I don't think anybody has had a bigger impact this season, except arguably now Bo Bichette, than Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
When it comes to marketing, I totally agree.
Yes.
Yeah, and you know, I actually agree with that. I do see that this guy is going to be the face of Major League Baseball in Canada for the next decade.
Would you give him the team MVP based on the season, though?
Yes.
I think so.
Really? Because he hasn't, like, second in RBIs is okay, I guess, but I don't know. I'd go on the assumption that he's going to win his team MVPs and give it to Grichuk this year. And
that's fair.
I could see that. That's very fair.
All right, folks. So that brings us to the bottom of the show here. It's been great talking baseball. I hope you've enjoyed it. Make sure you catch our Twitter account and also catch our podcast if you're not in our viewing area. Next week, we have Brad Schaefer from Schaefer Glove Relacing, good old Durham guy. And we're going to talk about, we're going to forecast which teams are going to be most improved next season.
Maybe our very own Blue Jays.
Maybe our very own Blue Jays. So for Adam, Rob, Jamie, and myself, we'll see you next week here on Baseball Talk.